Saw who? The ghost! Maud yelled. She was terrifying. She had gray skin and bright white hair and angry, terrible eyes. She just stood there staring at me. Maud had tears in her eyes. She was looking at the ceiling like the ghost was up there now. What did you do? Asked Mackenzie, also looking at the ceiling, fully expecting for a moment to see something up there. I ran to the stairs, and then I had a moment of, I don't know, bravery or insanity, and I turned back to see if she was still there. She wasn't. She was just gone. I have to tell you, that was more frightening than if she'd still been there, because then I expected to turn and see her blocking the doorway, like in a movie. But she wasn't there either. And before I knew what I was doing, I was running from room to room, looking behind and underneath everything. But she was gone. It was gone. Vanished. For someone who had been so adamant that there were ghosts in the old house, Maud seemed awfully surprised to have actually seen one. Okay, said Suna. So we have this weird old homeless lady living in the attic. What? Said Maud. No, we do not. Were you even listening to what I was saying? Maud, said Suna. It's not that I don't believe you saw something. I totally do. But I don't think it was a ghost. I know you believe in these things. I don't. I just don't. Whatever's up there freaks me out. It's scary to have anything in your house, even if it's something as benign as a spider. A whole person? Forget it. I'm glad I'm not living in your apartment. I can't imagine how much that must mess with your head. But ghosts aren't real. And that lady you saw is totally just some rando living in our attic. That's how she disappeared. She went up the stairs, shut the door behind her. We should call the landlord. Or even the police. I don't know why we haven't already. Maybe because it hadn't occurred to me that it might be a person. I think I still thought it was you somehow. Or animals. In the middle of the night, the ghost thing seemed almost plausible, but now... Now I just think we should call Larry and tell him to clear out the attic.
I'm not against calling Larry, Maud said. But he's not going to find anything up there. He's not going to find
She gasped for breath.
A rando? We don't have randos. We have ghosts. And Larry is very hard to get a hold of. He rarely answers his phone.
Suna tipped her head to the side.
Maud cut her off.
It was a ghost, Suna. You know how I know? Because I recognized her. And she's dead.
You recognized her?
Yes, I recognized her.
From where? Mackenzie had goosebumps on her bare arms. She wondered if ghosts stayed put when they haunted houses or if this particular one had followed Maud to the coffee shop. Was she sitting at their table listening?
You knew it? Mackenzie whispered.
No.
Maud turned her attention to Mackenzie, seemingly glad that someone was taking her seriously. I didn't know her when she was alive, but I've seen her before. In the newspaper.
In the obituaries.
Maud. Suna shook her head.
It's true.
Well, I'm going to call the landlord at least,
said Suna, irritation creeping back into her voice. Mackenzie had wondered how long it would take for Suna to lose patience with Maud.
I need to call him about a broken window in my place anyway, and he probably has a key to the attic. He can go see if someone is squatting up there.
Or animals.
Maud grunted.
I know the difference between a woman, ghost or not, and a bunny rabbit.
I know you do, Maud. But you said yourself you were sleeping right before you saw the woman in your kitchen. You might have heard a noise in the attic when you were half asleep and seen her before you'd fully woken up. Especially since she looked like someone you'd seen before, even if just in a newspaper picture.
That's what I think. That makes sense. We have animals living in the attic, and you dreamt a lady in your kitchen.
Maud still looked frantic and afraid, but her face was now also pinched with anger. She grunted again.
Oh, but I can show you the ripped papers. And maybe it took my rings that night, if neither of you did.
Mackenzie remembered her missing shoes.
And my shoes, she said to Suna.
Where did you say you found those again?
Suna started to reply, but then she stopped. My books, she said under her breath.
She picked the book up from the table and leafed through to one of the ripped pages. She pulled another book from her tote bag and flipped through. More torn pages. She shook her head.
I have the landlord's phone number in my phone. But what's his name again?
Larry, said Mackenzie.
He doesn't answer his phone, said Maud. I just said that.
Larry answered on the first ring. Suna spoke curtly into the phone, frowning at whatever he said. She walked away from the table and stuck a finger in her other ear to block out the noise from the cafe. When she came back, she flopped into her chair and rolled her eyes.
Had to basically twist his arm off, but he'll come over tonight around 7.
He's kind of a weirdo, hey? Be nice, said Mackenzie. Face to face with a ghost. Larry. Larry could hardly believe his luck when he answered the phone and heard Suna's voice on the line. He'd been expecting Maud again, and Suna's voice was like a reward.
Hi, Larry, she said. This is Suna. I live in one of your buildings.
Like she thought he was someone who might own more than one building. Like she thought he'd ever forget who she was, even if he had 1,000 tenants in 1,000 buildings. He tried not to stutter.
Hi, Suna. Yeah, sure, I remember you. What can I do for you?
Okay, so I'm here with the other two tenants, and we've been hearing a lot of noise coming from the attic. We'd like you to come over and see if there's some kind of animal infestation or something. It's quite loud, and we're concerned. Maud, the lady on the top floor, she thinks there might be people up there. Or, well, she thought she saw a woman in her apartment anyway. She lowered her voice. Think she imagined it? But still, I can tell it's upsetting her. So.
The ghosts. The skin on his arms bubbled up. Would she think he was crazy if he told her it was ghosts? Probably. He didn't want that. Was he brave enough to go up there after having been expressly forbidden in his aunt's will? Nope.
You know what, Suna? I actually don't have access to the, attic.
What do you mean you don't have access? This is your house, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I don't have the key. The door's locked there, and...
So get someone to come open it. Take the door off, break it down, pick the lock.
She paused.
This is your house, she said again.
He laughed. He wanted to tell her, this isn't my house or your house or any living person's house.
Well, he began, yes, but actually, he coughed. So my aunt left me this house when she died, and in her will, it specifically says I can't go into the attic.
Why?
Well, it didn't say. It just says I can't. The will had a bunch of rules like that. Like, I can't plant, flowers in the...
I'm sorry, Larry, but it's not like she's going to find out. She's dead. Who's going to tell on you? What's she going to do about it?
That's true, but...
How did you admit to someone, especially another adult, especially an adult you had a crush on, that you believed in ghosts? And not only that you believed in them, but that you owned a house full of them and were too cowardly to disobey their rules. The answer? You didn't.
I'm sorry, Suna. I'll look into it.
He wouldn't. But he would say he would, and then he would say he had. And then maybe he'd ask her out. Or maybe she'd ask him out. She seemed assertive and confident. At which point he would, of course, say yes.
When?
Today? 7?
Okay.
She hung up without saying thank you or goodbye. He frowned at the phone. At first he thought maybe she was oblivious, that her flippant disregard for him came from shyness, like his, and she didn't know how she came across. But now he realized she was actually just rude. Disappointing. Rude or not, Suna was Larry's tenant. It was his responsibility to at least make her feel heard, to show up when she asked him to show up. It was 7:10 p.m. He was late, as usual, but he showed. Suna opened the door. Maud was there, too, as sour and shriveled as the last time he'd seen her. He felt awkward seeing these women. Did they know they were being investigated? Larry had been asked not to mention the visit from the officers, so maybe they didn't. They hadn't asked anything that gave him much of a sense of what was going on. Just wanted to know if the women had jobs, where they hung out, that kind of thing. The police must have been having a hard time getting a hold of them. The other girl, Mackenzie, was not with them, which was too bad. She was the nicest one. He smiled at the women. They did not smile back.
"Hi," he said.
"Hello, Larry," Maud said. "You're late."
"I'm sorry," he said.
"It's fine," she said in a voice that also said, "It's not fine," at the same time. "Follow me." Maud creaked up the stairs, Larry following obediently, and Suna came last, her steps almost silent. Larry heard her, though, loud as crashing cymbals behind him. He'd decided earlier that he didn't much care for the rude woman in 2139B, beautiful or not. But now he was in her presence and thought he could give her another chance. After all, some people made terrible impressions 1 through 3 and then ended up making a very good 4th impression. He'd heard of it happening. They entered Maud's suite and stood in front of the locked attic door. The two women looked at Larry expectantly. He smiled and shrugged his lanky shoulders.
"So, like I said, I don't have a key or anything."
"We could try a credit card," said Suna.
She nodded at the door. Larry felt stuck. What if a credit card was all it took? He hadn't thought they were going to watch him, and he had no idea what to do if it worked. There was no way he was going up there. His plan had been to stand in front of the door for a while, then say he'd gone up and found nothing. That plan would not work with these two women watching him. He slid a card out of his wallet, cringing when he saw he'd chosen his Blockbuster card. He tried to obscure it in his palm so Suna wouldn't see, and made a pathetic attempt at sliding the card into the crack in the door. When nothing happened, he tried to look disappointed.
"What else did you bring?" said Suna. "We could call a locksmith."
"Do you have a hex key?"
asked Maud.
"What? What? No, I don't. I don't think so," said Larry.
Maud scowled.
"Whoa. Did you hear that?"
Larry backed away from the door.
A footstep.
He looked at Maud and then Suna. They both seemed uneasy, but neither moved. Neither of them coughed either, but he heard a cough nonetheless.
"Did you hear that?"
he asked in a low whisper. Suna nodded.
"That's not a rabbit,"
Maud whispered. Larry couldn't help but snort. Of course it wasn't a rabbit. There was clearly a person just on the other side of the door. So close that if there hadn't been a door there, he could have reached out and touched them. A person or a ghost. Did ghosts cough? They probably couldn't catch colds. But maybe if they'd had one when they died, it just stuck around forever? Who knew how ghosts worked?
"Who's there?"
yelled Suna. Larry felt the blood drain from his head.
"Seriously!"
shouted Suna. She leaned forward and thumped on the door once with a flat hand.
"I'm calling the police right now."
She wasn't bluffing. She was tapping away on her phone, dialing a number much longer than 911. He wanted to say, "You could just call 911. But he couldn't say anything. He felt like he'd swallowed his tongue. The door began to heave toward them, as though it was being kicked from behind. Maud and Larry froze. But Suna just looked annoyed.
"Stop that," she yelled. "Not kidding, I'm seriously calling the police. Like, right now."
She held the phone up to her ear. A thudding sound came from above. A unified stomp. Larry worried the roof would burst open and something supernatural would come flooding out. What would it look like? Would it be like bees pouring from a broken hive?
"Hello,"
yelled Suna into her phone. Larry couldn't tell if she was actually irritated or if she was just masking her fear with irritation.
"Yeah, can you hear that? That's in my house, in my attic. No, I don't know what it is. Yeah, I'd like for someone to come check it out. I think I have people living up there. Yeah, I mean, I'm renting. Yeah, he is here with me. He doesn't know what it is either."
She gave the address and her name and phone number and even engaged in a bit of small talk, much to Larry's chagrin, and then,
"Thank you,"
She hung up, nodded, and screamed at the ceiling. The police are coming!
The pounding stopped, all at once. The three adults looked up at the ceiling. Larry wanted nothing more than to run out of the house and never look back. Let the house rot. He realized he'd wrapped his spindly arms around himself, gripping so hard his knuckles were white, in a silly-looking, self-comforting stance. He straightened his back and lowered his hands to his sides, a movement that took an extreme amount of effort.
Aren't you supposed to stay on the line?
I don't know. They didn't say to. Maybe that's just with 911. The trio was silent. Maud still staring upward. Suna fiddling with her phone. Larry drumming his fingers against the sides of his legs. The situation had moved from terror to... to what? Comedy? It was a little funny. What was funny about it? Nothing. Nothing at all. And yet, Larry started to laugh. Suna rolled her pretty eyes at him and then back to the screen of her phone. But Maud locked him in her piercing, hawk-like gaze.
What? She spat. It's so funny.
Nothing, he said. But he had a hard time keeping errant giggles from escaping. He tried to smile at Suna, but she gave him a cautioning look. He now understood that song about laughing at funerals. He understood the word hysteria. He worried he might start crying next, and if the laughing thing was any indication, he wouldn't be able to control that either. There was a faint knocking sound, but this time it was coming from down the stairs instead of the attic. The police, he exclaimed, and there was more unwelcome giggling.
Let them in, said Maud.
And he could never remember afterward if she'd actually said, idiot, out loud, or just implied it so strongly that he thought he'd heard it spoken.
Sure, said Larry.
He practically fell down the stairs trying to get away from these rude, unhappy women and their spiritual cohabitants. A pair of officers greeted him warily when he answered the door, and he realized that he was officially trapped. He'd have to show them upstairs and let them break that door down and stand by as they unleashed angry spirits on an otherwise very pleasant neighborhood.
Thanks so much for coming,
Larry said brightly, racking his brain for a way out.
I'm the landlord. My tenant called you. Called your people. Called your, dispatch person.
May we come in? The taller of the two asked.
Absolutely. Please do,
he said, stepping to the side and motioning up the stairs. He heard Maud and Suna greet the officers and made his way slowly after them.
Now what?
Everyone was waiting for him when at last he stepped into Maud's suite.
You don't have the key? Asked one of the policemen.
No, he said. He cleared his throat. So, in the will... Okay. So I inherited this house from my aunt, first of all, and...
He had so much saliva all of a sudden. He tried to swallow but couldn't get it down his throat, which suddenly felt about as wide as a stir stick. He swallowed several times, uncomfortably, and was aware he looked incredibly guilty. Of what? Who knew at this point? Did the policeman know about the bomb threat investigation? Not that it concerned him. It was just another bizarre wrinkle in this strange visit.
I inherited it from my aunt, and in her will, she said I couldn't go into the attic. She didn't leave a key or anything. So,
he nodded.
So, locked up. Tight as a drum.
He felt some of the stray saliva dribble out of his mouth, and embarrassed, he slurped it back in, wiping his face with the back of his hand. Maud and Suna cast looks at each other, as though saying things about him telepathically. Terrible things.
Can you break it down?
Asked Suna.
The policeman looked at Larry. I'm as curious as anyone, but... Well, she specifically said that if I wanted to keep the house...
Are you hiding something up there?
Asked one of the officers.
No, said Larry. No, I'm just as curious as anyone.
He trailed off. What if they found something awful up there? A body or something? Lots of bodies. One thing was certain. If he protested too much now, it would look bad for him later on.
Yeah, you can definitely break it down if you want. I mean, that would,
That would be good. Great. Definitely do that.
He noticed Suna looking at him with something like disgust. The way he found it hard to stop giggling earlier, he now found it hard to stop talking.
In fact, he babbled, I've kind of always wanted to see the police break down a door, just like in the movies. Let's get this party started.
Everyone was ignoring him now. The shorter officer stepped forward and pounded on the door.
Hello, he called. Is anyone up there? This is the police. If anyone is up there, you need to come down and unlock this door right now.
There was, of course, no answer. Larry waited for the pounding to start up again in the attic, but it didn't.
You're quite sure you heard someone up there?
Asked one of the officers. All three nodded emphatically. Maud crossed her arms.
I'd venture to say we heard at least 10 people up there.
We'll go up and check it out for you, said the tall officer.
The other one stepped forward and jiggled the handle. He leaned into it to see if it would give, but the lock was sturdy. He pulled a tool out of what seemed like midair and effortlessly jimmied the lock. Larry was impressed. The door swung inward. The utter humiliation. Mackenzie.
Thank ye, matey.
Mackenzie mumbled her lines at the debit machine and adjusted her tricorn, trying not to make eye contact with the girl standing in front of her.
Kindly walk the plank to the pickup window and...
She sighed heavily.
Ahoy! There your pizza will be.
Pardon? Said the girl, who was wearing a miniskirt and so much eyeliner that her little eyes looked like black cracks in the middle of her clay-like face.
Pickup windows over there?
Mackenzie pointed. The girl wandered off in that direction, looking confused.
What ails you, bosun?
Randall was in annoyingly high spirits today, standing too close to everyone and talking too loudly, his breath reeking of alcohol.
You look to be in Davy's grip. Please, lassie, don't forget to talk like a buccaneer. It's in the job descriptor.
He surveyed his restaurant proudly like it was a ship.
And you needs to get to work, swabbing the poop. Ahoy!
He was gone as quickly as he'd come, sweeping flamboyantly into the kitchen, yelling happily at one of the line cooks in pirate gibberish. Mackenzie stared after him until she realized another customer was standing in front of her.
Ahoy there, matey,
said Mackenzie, sounding more like a sad robot than a pirate.
Ahoy,
said a familiar voice. Her head snapped up, and her cheeks turned bright red.
What can I get for you today? She asked, abandoning her lines, lowering her voice so Randall wouldn't hear.
Oh, hey, Mackenzie. I didn't recognize you at first. You're all piratey.
Jared stood before her, just as neat and clean-looking as the last time, but without the doctor fiancé affixed to his hand.
Yep.
She wanted to die. What was worse than running into an ex-boyfriend? Answer, running into an ex-boyfriend with a stuffed parrot velcroed to your shoulder. There were no words for this kind of humiliation.
I guess, you know, it's a small city. We'll probably run into each other a lot, said Jared.
Jared seemed perfectly fine with the prospect, but Mackenzie wasn't sure how to feel. It was one thing to have closure, however spotty or inadequate. It was another thing to have to see the person a lot afterward, especially if she was going to be dressed like a pirate for some of the encounters.
Yup, she said. Probably. So, cool.
They stood there in awkward silence, and Mackenzie couldn't help but wish they had come to the restaurant together and that she wasn't in a pirate costume and that she was going to be a doctor someday.
Well, I just want a pepperoni pizza, a deep dish one.
Okay, said Mackenzie. She hid her hands behind the cash register so Jared wouldn't see they'd started shaking again. What was wrong with her?
I think you mean pepperoni, young lad.
Randall's voice boomed from behind Mackenzie, and she was so frazzled that she jumped and banged her hip on the cash register, which jangled and beeped, spitting out the cash tray and spilling quarters on the floor. She stared down at the pile of change, clutching her hip, her face blazing. Jared barely acknowledged the display. He was distracted by Randall, the swaggering pirate who swung one boot way up onto the counter and struck a buccaneer pose too stretched and unstable to look natural or comfortable.
"Pick up those doubloons, matey, and get this lad his pepperoni."
Randall clapped Mackenzie on the back and lowered his voice.
"Did you forget, lassie? You're a buccaneer. Don't forget, or you'll dance the hempen jig."
He staggered away, and Jared and Mackenzie raised their eyebrows at one another. Mackenzie wished he wasn't watching her kneel on the floor to retrieve the coins. A memory from a long time ago wiggled to the surface, worm-like and uncomfortable. They'd been sitting on the floor in his kitchen late at night, backs against the cool wooden cabinets, eating leftovers out of Tupperware containers, talking.
"Jared," she'd said, "were you dating her when it happened?"
She'd never asked him that before. He'd played it cool and pretended to be stumped.
"Who?"
"You know who." He'd been quiet for long enough that he'd answered her question.
"Isn't it kind of weird to ask your boyfriend questions about his exes?"
"I don't know. I've never had a boyfriend before."
"Is it weird?"
But now he'd said it out loud, too. "Exes."
"Yeah, it's weird. It's not your business."
"You're not my business? My sister's not my business?"
"Your sister's not here."
He'd said it angrily. He'd gone from almost whispering to almost yelling.
"Whoa, sorry, Jared, are you mad?
At her?"
Mackenzie had set her food down on the tile.
"No, I meant me. Why would you be mad at her?
For getting herself killed. For leaving me like that."
"Are you kidding me?"
Mackenzie's head had swum when he'd said that. In all the weeks and months since the night her sister had disappeared, she had not even once thought to lay the blame there. Jared had softened then, just enough to reassure her, or for her to reassure herself, really, that he hadn't meant it like that.
"I just don't want to talk about her," he'd said finally. "It sucks what happened."
"Well, obviously I feel the same way, but I like talking about her."
He looked at her with a mix of frustration and anguish.
"Yeah, well, maybe it's not all about you."
"Dance the what?"
asked Jared, snapping Mackenzie back into the present. Mackenzie stood up, put the coins back in the register, dusted off her knees. She tried to regain her composure.
The hempen jig? He says that all the time. It's pirate speak for hanging somebody. Hemp, ropes, and, you know, people getting hung kind of look like they're dancing.
"Yeah, got it."
"So anyway, deep dish pep—"
She looked behind her for Randall.
"Pepperoni pizza? Pop?"
"No, just a cup for water, please."
Mackenzie nodded. She wanted to go back down on the floor and stay there until Jared was gone. At one point in time, she had been in love with the person in front of her. But he'd never prioritized her, never opened up to her, certainly never looked at her with pride or bragged about her to anyone. And when he was done with her, he didn't even tell her. Was it just a high school rite of passage to be so utterly infatuated with someone who didn't care about you at all? Even more humiliating, was she just the replacement sister? The one he settled for because the one he wanted was gone?
"It's not about you."
Maybe what he'd meant was,
"It's not about you at all, any of it."
But she was also humiliated at her present-day self, who still wanted him. Still wanted to know why he'd left her, wanted to hear him say that he missed her and wanted her back. She wanted him to explain how he could be so hung up on Tanya, could be so angry at her for leaving him, and then turn around and do the exact same thing to Mackenzie. "Here," she said, handing him an empty cup. "Pop machine's over there. Handle on the left for water." He hesitated.
"Thanks."
Then,
"Hey, Mackenzie,
Sorry if that was weird the other day with, my...
He let out a breath.
I mean, it's not like we were serious, you and me, but I didn't know if I should, you know, get into it right then. Because it was a long time ago and it just would have been weird, right? For Lauren to be like, oh, by the way, Mackenzie and I... Mackenzie and I don't even know what.
He laughed, and she saw him relax.
Okay, anyway, I'm going to get my...
He looked around and then leaned in conspiratorially.
Pepperoni pizza.
Later, Mackenzie.
He did a little drum fill on the counter with his pointer fingers, looking relieved to have said what he needed to. He didn't seem to mind or even notice that he hadn't given her a chance to say anything back. She tried to take stock of her feelings, but there were too many, and she was still at work. Grant appeared at her side, like she'd summoned him.
You okay?
Not so much, she said, grateful to be able to say it out loud.
Need to take a break?
Nah, I'm good.
Take your break, he said, patting her lightly on her shoulder. I got this.
Slowly, the stream of customers tapered off, and Randall staggered out the door, singing at the top of his lungs. Grant left his post at the pizza ovens and leaned over the counter beside Mackenzie.
So who was that guy?
Mackenzie chewed her thumbnail.
Which one?
The guy who threw you off so badly.
X.
Ah. You okay?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay.
He looked closely at her face like he was checking to make sure she wasn't lying and cleared his throat.
Here's an awkward, possibly inappropriate segue. I was wondering if you'd go out with me sometime. A date.
She looked at him in surprise.
I know this super gross place with no health codes and a drunk pirate, he continued.
She laughed weakly.
He scratched his head, looking embarrassed. I'm sorry, that was terrible timing. I was just on my way over here to say that and didn't realize I'd be following up a visit from your ex. But then I had this emotional momentum.
No, it's all good. Sorry, it's just, you know, it's just been a really crazy week. Really crazy. Family stuff, you know? And then him. I think I just need some time, you know?
Totally. No worries.
He gave her a genuine smile, but she could tell he was embarrassed. He, too, was wearing a parrot and a tricorn.
I'll work on my timing and ask again later, maybe?
She nodded.
I'd be okay with that.
She glanced around the nearly empty restaurant. A shadowy figure sat in the farthest corner booth. It was wrapped in a long coat, collar up, covering its hair, hat pulled low over its face. Grant followed her gaze.
That person's been here for an hour at least, he said. Hasn't ordered anything. I don't want to ask anyone to leave, especially if they've got nowhere else to go, but...
Mackenzie shrugged.
It's not like people are clamoring for tables, she said. I'll go see if they're okay.
Good call, said Grant.
Thanks, and again, I'm really sorry.
Mackenzie half wished now that she'd said yes to him. It was too bad that the best test for whether a guy was worth going out with was refusing to go out with him.
You have nothing to be sorry for, she said. I'm just kind of in the middle of something.
Totally, he said again. She walked to the corner booth and sat across from the shriveled figure.
What are you doing? She asked.
The figure sniffed.
It's perfectly within my rights to be at a pizza parlor.
Well, sure, Maud. But you should probably buy something if you don't want to get kicked out for loitering.
Maud jerked her head up.
I was going to. Just haven't decided what I'm in the mood for.
She took her hat off. Her hair was matted and sweaty.
Maud, did you not want me to know you were here?
Of course I wanted you to know I was here. How else was I going to order my pizza? I've been waiting for over an hour. The service in here is terrible.
Then what's with all this? You're not even wearing your usual hat. You look like you're trying to be discreet.
And this is an order at the counter kind of place.
Well, I'm not trying to be discreet.
I'm not trying to be anything. I'm just going out for pizza, and I was cold. And I thought it might rain. And I wanted to wear a different hat. Sue me. And I didn't want people trying to talk to me. People trying to talk to you, much less when you dress in a way that tells them not to. But of course, you already know that. Mackenzie tried not to laugh. She felt strangely comforted by the older woman's presence. Jared's visit had ripped her into the past, and Maud was coaxing her back into the present. Okay, okay. Sorry, Maud. What can I bring you? What kind of pizza do you like?
Cheese, said Maud.
Just cheese?
That's what I said.
Mackenzie went into the kitchen and dished two slices of cheese pizza onto paper plates for her and Maud.
Grant, she said, I'm going to sit with that lady. She's having a hard time.
Randall's gone home, right?
Yep, said Grant, clearly impressed.
That's really nice of you. Take your time. Nothing to do back here.
She paused in the doorway.
Hey, Grant.
Yeah?
Do you want to go out sometime?
With me?
He grinned.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
When she returned to Maud, the woman had taken off her jacket as well and was holding her shirt away from her chest, fanning her face with the other hand.
It's too hot in here, she complained when the pizza was set in front of her.
Then why are you wearing that jacket? Asked Mackenzie.
Maud took a big bite of her pizza. When her mouth was half full, she grunted at Mackenzie to signal that she had something important to say.
Mmm, she said. The police went into our attic tonight.
Oh, yeah? Said Mackenzie.
Larry didn't come?
Well, he came, but he didn't have a key, and he was a big wuss about it. And then the ghost started banging on the door, so Suna called the police. They picked the lock.
Maud took another bite of pizza, and Mackenzie wanted to smack her on the back of the head so it would come back out so Maud could finish telling the story.
Luckily, Maud didn't wait until her mouth was even close to empty before speaking.
They opened the door, and Larry just cowered in the hallway, shaking like a little puppy dog. It was pathetic. But the two officers went up, and Suna and I followed them. There wasn't anything to see. We didn't even all fit. We had to stand on the stairs and look around. It was just an icky old attic. Tiny, empty, pitch black, no windows or anything. Not even anything stored in there.
She sniffed disdainfully.
Obviously, we didn't see any ghosts, obviously. If the ghosts don't want you to see them, you don't.
And nothing else? Asked Mackenzie. Like animal droppings?
Maud looked vaguely insulted.
No, we didn't find any animal droppings because we didn't find animals. We didn't find a homeless gentleman in a sleeping bag or, what was Suna's word, Randall's?
Randos.
Sure. We didn't find anything or anyone because ghosts are invisible unless they don't want to be.
Weird, said Mackenzie.
That ghosts are invisible?
No, that they didn't find anything in the attic. I thought for sure they'd find something.
She shuddered. Maud looked exasperated.
So, does this little visit of yours have anything to do with what Suna told me?
Mackenzie asked, after they'd eaten in silence for a few minutes.
I don't know what Suna told you,
said Maud, but she looked guilty. A clump of pizza fell out of her mouth onto her lap.
She said you think I'm Kate.
Maud was clearly trying to look natural, but her eyes were now watching Mackenzie's hands instead of her face, and the corners of her mouth were pulled taut. Mackenzie raised her eyebrows and leaned forward. She'd seen Maud and Suna play this standoff game enough times that she knew how it worked. She smiled and waited.
Well, are you?
Asked Maud at last. Mackenzie was surprised at how easily she'd won. Did this mean she could beat Suna as well?
No,
she said.
Oh, for Pete's sake, said Maud.
What?
I don't believe you. Also, I can't believe you think I'm so stupid. I saw your picture in magazines and I read all the papers. I know everything.
Mackenzie was surprised at how calm she felt. Like she was watching other people have this conversation. Like this conversation was about people she didn't know instead of her family. Part of it was, she figured, the fact that Maud clearly didn't know everything.
didn't seem to even know half of it.
You don't, though, if you think I'm Kate Simons.
I don't think you're Kate Simons. I think you're Kate Weiss.
Mackenzie felt her ears turn red.
Which magazine?
Blade something? Muffin? Cake? Something baking related. Blade cake? That's not it.
You read Razor Cake, Maud?
Maud looked down her nose at Mackenzie, which was difficult, almost impossible, as Mackenzie was so much bigger than her.
Yes, she said primly. I do.
Mackenzie snorted. Sure. Well, I'm sorry, Maud, but you're wrong. I'm not Kate, and you don't seem to actually know anything.
I read the papers,
Maud said again, her mouth full of pizza.
Not carefully enough, apparently.
Are you saying the papers were wrong?
Asked Maud, as offended as if she had edited the papers herself.
I didn't say that at all. I'm saying you probably didn't read every article to do with the case.
And you clearly don't know anything about my family. You don't know the first thing about me. And that's all I'm going to say about that because I already asked you not to snoop around in my business. Mackenzie stood. I have to get back to work. You can pay for your pizza at the counter. I was going to say it's on the house, but... She shrugged again.
A good spy doesn't make their subject foot the bill. And I'm pretty done with you right now, to be honest.
In spite of her firm words, Mackenzie felt her voice shake. She took a deep breath. Maud looked deflated. She had cheese stuck to her right cheek in the hollow below her eye. Everything about her sagged. Mackenzie sat back down. She couldn't help herself.
Look, she said. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. We're just not going to talk about me anymore.
There is one thing I've been meaning to say to you, and the fact that you researched my life and came to my place of employment to spy on me makes me feel like I have the right to be a little intrusive.
Like Suna says.
Fair. So I'm going to say it, and then I'm going back to work. Okay?
Maud somehow appeared to agree, or at least concede, without moving a single muscle.
You should call that guy. Richard. Closure feels good. Maybe it would make you feel better.
She stood up. She thought of Jared, of what he'd said. It's not like we were serious. How stupid had she been to think he'd written that letter? He hadn't even thought they were serious.
Yeah, sure, Mackenzie. Closure feels great.
Call him? Maud scoffed. Oh, I won't be doing that.
Why?
Because I hate him. Because he doesn't deserve to hear from me.
Maud, he might not deserve to hear from you, but you deserve to hear from him. You deserve closure. And who knows? Maybe it's not how you remember it.
What do you mean? That I lied?
No, I mean that maybe you remember him leaving you at the altar, but there was something else about the situation that you don't remember or didn't understand at the time. Maybe he had a reason, I don't know.
That all sounds super patronizing, and I don't mean to. I'm just saying, maybe sometimes these things aren't as cut and dry as they seem.
You're a little girl, Maud burst out. Who are you to give me a relationship advice?
Mackenzie bit the inside of her cheek.
I'm not giving you relationship advice. I know nothing about relationships, and I don't give out relationship advice. I'm giving you post-relationship advice. All the credentials you need to divvy that one out is post-relationship experience, which I do have.
Maud frowned.
I don't even have his phone number.
So find it. It's 2020. You can find anyone. She flinched as she said the words, knowing firsthand they weren't true. The Case of the Rogue Floppy Hat. Suna.
When Suna walked into her living room after work the next morning, it felt wrong again. And it only took her a moment to figure out why. The curtains. The curtains were open. And as she grasped them to slide them shut, she saw something even more unsettling. The tape was gone. The hole was gone. She second-guessed herself. This was the window through which she'd thrown her cell phone the other night, wasn't it? She checked every other window in her suite, and every one was intact. She felt like she was going crazy. Could you call the police to report a fixed window? Could you report anything the day after the police had been at your house to check for rabbits in the attic? Legs shaking, she stumbled into the kitchen for a drink of water. And that was when she saw the parrot. Mackenzie's shoulder parrot from her Picaroon costume, perched on top of her refrigerator. Its glassy black eyes stared blankly at her, like it was confused about where it was and who she was. She stared back. It blinked. No, it didn't. A car had driven past and reflected light briefly into her kitchen and across those beady eyeballs, causing the illusion of movement. She grabbed the parrot and slipped into the hallway, knocking softly on Mackenzie's door. For some reason, she didn't want Maud to be part of this conversation. There was the usual sound of the chair being dragged away from the door. Despite the fact that Mackenzie now knew it did nothing to keep anyone out, Suna had never met someone with such a tough exterior who was also so noticeably paranoid. Footsteps traveled up the stairs, and the door clicked and opened. Mackenzie peered out, eyes wide. She relaxed when she saw Suna standing there. "Hey, Suna, what's up?"
"Someone fixed my window," said Suna.
"What? What window?"
"I threw my..."
Suna didn't want Mackenzie to think she was psychotic. "I dropped it..." Mackenzie waited patiently.
"I accidentally broke a window in my place a few days ago, and when I got home from work this morning, it was fixed."
"Larry?"
"Ugh."
Suna hadn't thought of that. "Is he allowed to just come into our places like that?"
"Doubt it."
"Hope not. But who else?"
"Oh, and I found this on my fridge."
Suna held out the parrot. Mackenzie frowned as she took the stuffed bird.
"How? I was just wearing this last night."
She looked down the stairs behind her.
"But the chair was still under the doorknob when I woke up this morning."
A shriek, a thud, and the sound of breaking glass from above caused them both to jump, and Suna grabbed Mackenzie's shoulder.
"What was that?"
Mackenzie shook her head.
"Maud? Should we check to see if she's okay?"
Suna knocked on the door. "Maud!" she yelled. "You okay?" They heard a shuffling sound above them, and then Maud screamed, "Stop it, Janet! Don't eat that!" They looked at each other. Janet?
"Someone's up there with her," said Suna. "She sounds like she's okay. Should we just leave her alone?"
Another thud then.
"Janet!"
Suna knocked again. "Everything okay up there, Maud?"
"No!"
Maud yelled back. She sounded hysterical.
"There are artichoke hearts everywhere!"
There was the sound of stomping feet and a crack like a baseball bat hitting the floor above their heads.
"Stop that, Janet!"
"Can we come up?"
Suna called tentatively. She didn't want to go up. She hoped Maud would say no. But instead, she heard the familiar clack of Maud's heels on the steps behind her door. The door was flung open, and Maud stood there with a broom in her hands.
"Can you hold Janet for me?"
she pleaded. Her eyes were full of tears, and her wiry hair was sticking up so that she looked like a mad scientist.
"Who's Janet?"
said Mackenzie. She had backed up against her door and was clutching the knob, ready to escape to her basement at a moment's notice. But Maud just turned and marched back up her stairs. Suna and Mackenzie followed. What else could they do? They found Maud in her kitchen, a broken jar on the floor. She was trying to mop something up with a sopping wet tea towel while using the broom to smack the floor beside her cat, Janet, who was attempting to help her clean up the mess by eating it.
"What happened?"
asked Mackenzie softly.
"I was making omelets. I was trying to open this jar of artichoke hearts," said Maud, sniffling hard.
"But they don't make it so you can open jars these days. It's like they don't want you to open them. And when Richard was around, Richard would get into these jars for me, but..."
She choked on a sob.
"But Richard isn't here, is he? So I have to open the jars by myself. And I can't. They're so stupid. It's like he didn't think of that when he left me. It's like he wasn't even thinking about jars. It's like he wasn't thinking that I might want some artichoke hearts."
Maud was weeping now, kneeling on the floor, waving her broom in the air.
"Stop it, Janet," she wailed.
Artichoke hearts aren't good for cats.
Mackenzie stepped forward and picked Janet up. The cat stared at the parrot already in Mackenzie's arms. The parrot was still staring at Suna.
Do you have some paper towels?
Suna asked, after a moment of silence.
No,
said Maud. She was starting to calm down, looking more embarrassed than angry now.
I have this. This is what I have.
She wrung the tea towel into the sink, rinsed it out, and wrung it again.
I'll go get some paper towels, said Suna.
As she walked through Maud's empty living room, she heard Mackenzie say,
You okay, Maud?
Yes, said Maud. I just don't like living alone.
You don't live alone.
Mackenzie's kind voice floated out after Suna as she jogged down the stairs.
You live with Suna and me.
The women cleaned up the artichokes and the broken glass. Maud gave Janet some cat food, admonishing her like she was a child. They met again after lunch and drove to the coffee shop together and sat in their usual spot, being watched by the usual baristas drinking their usual drinks. When Mackenzie got up to use the bathroom, Maud leaned across the table and whispered conspiratorially to Suna that she had been spying.
Maud!
Suna shook her head disapprovingly.
You need to leave that girl alone. You need to leave me alone. Just leave everybody alone.
That's what you want? Is that what everyone wants? Do you want me to ghost you?
Maud was sulking. Maud's sulking face was just her regular face with the chin tucked in.
That's not what I meant.
But it's what you said.
Suna rolled her eyes.
I didn't say that at all. I mean, you've got to get back from people's business. Get out of their space. Don't, you know, investigate them. People don't like being investigated.
When have I ever investigated you?
Well, you sure interrogate me a lot. That's either equal or worse. It's definitely not better.
Well, I'm sorry.
Suna tilted her head to the side.
You're what now?
Maud didn't answer.
Okay. I'm sorry too, Maud. I shouldn't have said it like that, but I do mean it. You can't spy on Mackenzie. It's not right, and it's not fair. You need to mind your own business.
Do you give this speech to police officers? Demanded Maud. Do you say this to private investigators? Do you storm into courtrooms, railing against the judge and the jury that they mind their own business?
Obviously not, said Suna. This is those people's jobs. You aren't a police officer or a private investigator or a judge or a juror.
What about Trixie Belden? Miss Marple? Jessica Fletcher?
They're fictitious characters and clearly don't hold any real weight in this discussion?
She ran her fingers through the ends of her hair.
Jessica Fletcher? Really, Maud?
Mackenzie returned, and Maud sat back in her chair with a snarl. Mackenzie eyed both with a knowing look.
You guys being nice? She joked.
Then she tilted her head at Maud.
Wait, Maud, where's your hat?
Maud touched her head sadly.
The ghosts took it.
This is getting ridiculous, said Mackenzie. What now?
What now what?
Asked Maud, her hand still resting atop her head like a substitute hat.
What do we do about this? There's something up there, but there's nothing up there, but whatever it is, it's still stealing our stuff. Ripping it up? Misplacing it?
I got a letter from the university the other day, and I had to email and ask them to resend it because all that was left of it was the return address. The three women stared at each other.
Move out? Suggested Suna.
There's nowhere to go, said Mackenzie. Larry didn't do his market research. Rent at this place is like $400 cheaper than anywhere else, especially this close to the U of R.
Maud and Suna nodded.
I don't feel unsafe, necessarily, Mackenzie added, especially with the two of you there. And if they are ghosts, I don't think they're mean.
Mean-spirited, said Maud without smiling.
Ha ha.
Mackenzie stared at her.
Spirits. Mean-spirited, a play on words.
Yeah, got it.
Sorry, Maud, I've just never heard you make a joke before.
I'm very funny, said Maud, picking something out of her teeth. Always been very funny.
Mackenzie smiled graciously and continued.
I'm not
afraid, necessarily. It's just unnerving. It's too weird. This they could all agree on, but no one knew what to do about it. Suna picked up her book, and Maud went back to her newspaper.
"Ooh, look at this," said Maud suddenly. "They have some new information about the bomb threats. They found tunnels underneath the art gallery."
"Joined to existing tunnels," Mackenzie read from across the table. "We have existing tunnels?"
"Of course we have existing tunnels," said Maud indignantly. "They used to carry coal-fired heat from a power plant to lots of the bigger buildings downtown. Everyone knows that."
"I didn't," said Mackenzie. "That's cool." Says, "A new tunnel was discovered beneath the gallery that led to a pre-existing tunnel that connected various buildings in the city to a central power plant about 200 meters south of the downtown area."
"Huh, like you said, Maud."
"They left behind an acetylene oxygen tank, concrete cutting saws, ladders, and lighting equipment in the tunnel below the art gallery."
"Oh, and check this out. Nothing was stolen."
Maud's face drooped. "Disappointing," she said.
"Why are you disappointed, Maud?"
Suna was incredulous.
"Why does everyone in this town love heists and bomb threats so much? Do people want crime?"
"Well, no," said Mackenzie, looking sheepish. "Not like muggings and stabbings and stuff. But art heists and bomb scares just feel more, I don't know, exciting, cinematic."
"But you don't have art heists," Suna huffed. You have whatever these are. People digging in basements and then running away. People making prank calls."
"I don't know, Maud." Mackenzie ignored Suna's grumbling. "It's not like this is nothing. In a lot of ways, I think this is more interesting than a heist. Who would go to all that trouble for no reason? The tools it would take to dig into the basement of the art gallery wouldn't be cheap. You wouldn't do that for fun. And I think there have been, like, 3 or 4 bomb threats at this point."
This cheered Maud considerably.
16, actually, she said, according to the papers. Suna rolled her eyes.
"Also according to the news websites and Twitter and Reddit."
But Maud didn't hear her. She was frozen, eyes wide, mouth hanging open like she'd been shot in the back of the head.
"Maud?"
Mackenzie looked concerned. "You okay?" Said Maud.
I...
She was pointing at a picture at the bottom of the page.
"It's... you," said Mackenzie.
Suna leaned over the table to see. There was a smaller heading that read, "Have you seen this woman?" Underneath was a picture of an older woman, dressed in all black, taken from the security camera footage. Her face was blurry and mostly obscured by a black hat, with a gothic prom corsage monstrosity on the side of it.
"Your hat's in the paper," said Mackenzie.
"Maud," said Suna, "did you... is this you?"
"Of course not," Maud snapped. "Context! She's buying a cell phone."
"Also making bomb threats," said Mackenzie.
"How dare they," said Maud.
"How dare they try to find the person who made bomb threats to an art gallery?
How dare they print my picture?"
"So, it is you?"
"Of course not."
"It really does look like you." Suna watched the back and forth with amusement.
"That's absolutely my hat, but it's not me. I'm being framed. How dare they?"
Maud said again, with even more conviction.
"Who would do that?"
"An enemy?" said Suna.
Maud scoffed. "I don't have enemies. I don't even have..."
She stopped, contemplated what she had been about to say, and looked at the women across the table, her eyes settling on Mackenzie.
"I don't have enemies," she said.
"Don't worry about it, Maud," Suna said. "Me and Mac will be your alibis." Maud looked like she was going to cry.
"Really?"
"Of course," Mackenzie said.
"We know where you are basically all the time, except when you sneak out to smoke on the porch. And no offense, Maud, but you're not exactly a high-profile figure. No one's going to look at this picture and go, 'It's Maud,' except me and Suna."
Maud looked doubtful.
"Okay, we'll figure this all out. It'll be okay. You'll be okay. But in the meantime," And because we don't know how long until you're arrested and have completely missed your chance.
Mackenzie laughed at her own joke and pulled out her cell phone and a piece of paper and slid them across the table to Maud.
What's this? Asked Maud suspiciously.
Richard Payne's phone number. Lucky for you, this is a small city and there's only one listed. He still lives here.
Shall I also tell him I'm being investigated by the police for making bomb threats to one of our city's most treasured institutions?
But Mackenzie held up a hand.
No, Maud. First of all, you're not being investigated. Your ex-hat is being investigated. Let it go for now. Secondly, you owe me. You know you do. And you owe yourself. You don't have to be nice to him. Just ask what happened.
She took her phone back and dialed the number from the paper, then passed it along the table again to Maud. The phone rang for what seemed like forever before they heard a man's voice on the other end. Maud looked to Mackenzie for help, but Mackenzie just raised her eyebrows.
Richard, Maud said. The voice mumbled. This is Maud.
There was no mumbling for a very long time. Then there was a lot of mumbling. Endless mumbling. Maud's face remained stoic. She didn't look at Mackenzie for any more help.
I see,
she said after a while. Then she said,
okay.
Then she said, yes, that's fine, but not at your house and not at mine. Do you know the coffee shop near the airport?
On Hill?
Soon I heard a faint, no.
It's across from the gas station, in between the crematorium and the tattoo parlor. It's called Paper Cup.
Yes, that's fine.
Thursday. I'll be there at 1:00.
Larry discovers he is an old fogey.
Larry.
Hello, Larry. Maud here. I just wanted to tell you that things have been continuing to disappear from my place.